pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, roll call.
John Steinberg.
Here.
Chris Keckler.
Here.
Mike Polakoff.
Here.
Dave Klimisch.
Here.
Mike Serpy.
Here.
Quorum present. Brings us to item 4, public hearings. We have two on the agenda this evening. First one being item A, consider the approval of the Quick Trip Incorporation's application for a Class A fermented malt beverage license and a Class A cider-only license for Quick Trip number 296 to be located at 10215 120th Avenue. Jane?
Mr. President and trustees, this public hearing is due to an application that was filed by Donald Detlow, who is the president for Quick Trip. Filed it with the clerk's office on July 22nd for a Class A fermented malt beverage license and a Class A cider-only license. Application requirements have been satisfied. Application requested Lee Allen Rockwell as agent. Chief Smetana has conducted the background check and has approved the agent. As of this meeting, there are outstanding municipal charges of $14,765.37 for sewer connection, utilities, engineering, and community development department fees. Quick Trip anticipates opening the first week of September with an open house and a ribbon cutting on September 18th. Pursuant to Chapter 194 of the Municipal Code, it requires an establishment to be open within 90 days of the issuance of the license, and so we're clearly within that time frame. I am requesting approval of the Quick Trip application and the approval and issuance of a Class A fermented malt beverage license and a Class A cider-only license, subject to the clerk's office receiving the following items: certificate of occupancy, payment in full of any and all municipal charges, payment of annual license fees, which will be prorated from the date of issuance to the end of the term, which is June 30th of 2020, and then payment of the publication costs, which I do know at this time is $5,405. So with that.
Okay. This being a public hearing, I'll open up to public comment or question.
There were no sign-ups.
Anyone wishing to speak? Anyone wishing to speak? Anyone wishing to speak? Close the public hearing, open up the board comment or question. I have one question. Since my apple tree died, I'm not sure what a Class A only cider license is.
Cider is, it's a certain fermented percentage of alcohol, so it wouldn't be, you know, like your wine coolers and those type of things.
Okay.
So that's what that would be.
So it's more than cider.
Yeah, yes, it's not like apple cider.
Okay. Other board comments or questions?
I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item B, and item B is to consider the approval of Final Resolution 1927. This is authorizing construction of public improvements and levying of special assessments against benefited properties for the construction, 12-inch water main and appurtenances, beginning approximately 120 feet south of 91st Street and extending north approximately 730 feet along Old Green Bay Road in the Village Pleasant Prairie. Is this your, Gene?
This is mine.
That's yours. Okay.
That's mine.
Matt.
So this is a public hearing for the extension of a water main and levying assessments. The public water main extension along Old Green Bay Road is being completed by Creekside MF LLC, or Bear Development, as part of the Vista Creekside Residential Project. As you can see from the map, which will be coming up shortly, the developer will be connecting to the existing water system along Old Green Bay Road and extending it south to their development. The existing 12-inch water main will be extended to 91st Street, which they will extend into their development to serve their properties. A right of recovery and funding agreement between the village and developer may be entered into with the cost over and above that portion of the cost properly chargeable to the developer may be subsequently recovered by the village and returned to the developer, which is referred to as a right of recovery. The right of recovery agreement will be taken up by the board this evening under a separate agenda item under new business. The preliminary resolution, Resolution 1916, was adopted May 20th, 2019, declaring the intent to exercise special assessment police powers in connection with the construction of the Vista Creekside Old Green Bay Road Water Main Project. Upon adoption of the preliminary resolution, the village engineer prepared a special assessment report computing the assessment amount levied to the benefited properties. The assessment report, which is included in your packet and also mailed out to the affected property owners, includes the final plans for the water main improvements, the cost of the improvements, the assessment method and rate calculation, and the schedule of proposed assessment against each parcel benefited by the improvements. Just to take a step back, since the map's up, the extension is shown in yellow on the map. It will be extended south, and the north part is the existing water main that they'll be connecting into, extending it south, and then they'll take it down 91st Street into their development to service their properties. On the map, you'll see the properties labeled 1 and 2. Those are the two properties that benefit from the water main extension that the right of recovery and special assessment includes. The water main right of recovery and village special assessment is based on frontage of benefited properties. The linear foot cost is calculated as the total project cost divided by the total water main length. The cost was then divided in half to account for both sides of the road. The size of the water main being constructed is 12-inch in diameter. The water main cost was reduced to represent an 8-inch main equivalent cost for the assessment. Water services are not included in the 8-inch main cost and are accounted for separately in the assessment schedule. The front footage assessment rate is applied to each benefited property. The frontage is the lot dimension abutting the public right-of-way of each benefited property. In this project, the total project cost as a 12-inch water main was $220,565. That's the bid price for that section of water main. That cost was reduced, like I said, as an 8-inch equivalent main. That cost is $166,530. So for the assessment purposes, the project cost was reduced from $220,565 to $166,530.77. The total length of water main was 851 feet, which puts it as $195.68 per lineal foot. That, again, was divided in half to account for both sides of the road, so that's $97.84 per front footage, which is the assessment cost per front footage. There are two water laterals, which were priced out at $2,117 per lateral. The right of recovery assessment. This right of recovery assessment is subject to the right of recovery and funding agreement between the Village of Pleasant Prairie and the developer of Vista Creekside for the public water main extension in Old Green Bay Road. The property owners may defer payment of the right of recovery assessment until the property connects to the municipal water system or as a precondition of land division approval. At the time the property owner connects to the municipal water system or the property is subdivided, the entire assessment shall become due and payable. After the right of recovery date, obligation is expired for the funding agreement, which is 10 years. The right of recovery assessment will expire, and it will be deemed paid at that time if they have not connected at that time. Like I said, there is two properties that were affected or benefit from this project. Schedule C identifies both of those properties and the right of assessment or right of recovery amount for each one. Property one had a total assessment of $19,815.28. and parcel 2 was $14,836.20. Again, those are deferred until they connect, or if they wait over 10 years, then it becomes deemed paid, as it's a right of recovery being paid by the developer. That being said, if there's any questions, I'll turn it back over to the board for the public hearing.
This being a public hearing, I'm going to open it up to public comment or question. Any sign-ups?
Mr. President, there were no sign-ups this evening.
Anyone wishing to speak on this item? Hearing none, I'll close the public hearing and open up the board comment or question.
I move approval of Resolution 1927.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second for Resolution 1927. Is there any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Concludes our public hearings. We'll move on to item 5, citizens' comments.
Mr. President, there were no sign-ups this evening.
Anyone wishing to speak on citizens' comments? Hearing none, I'll close citizens' comments. We'll move on to item 6, administrator's report.
Village Board President and Village Board members, just a couple of items to pass along. Within the slides, you'll see that I provided the draft of our strategic plan. We've spent a considerable amount of time, staff, refining and revising the work that we did back in February, in which we identified the core values of the village, primarily as we discussed about our mission, one word in particular resonated and came to the forefront. Our mission is to promote and preserve investment in our community as drafted. With that investment, we felt that there were four core values that stood out, one being vision, second professionalism, collaboration, and then finally quality. We have then identified basically our top 10 strategic initiatives based on the five items that we felt were our key problems or key focuses, being succession planning, fiscal constraints and resources, development of the Village Green, managing development as a total, and then staffing and workload balance. Clearly, we identified several initiatives. I think we came up with a total of 26 or 30 in that realm, but clearly to focus in on all 30 would require a lot more staff and a lot more minds. So we narrowed our scope to the top 10. These were the items that we voted on, both by department heads and also as a village board. And so those are before you. Again, this is in draft form, so I guess my plan is to send this strategic plan in this format to you for you to review. The intent is we'll have one more meeting tied with the budget planning process. In the next slide, the 20-year outlook is an area where we'll need to refine a little bit more. On this was just to give you kind of an overview or an outlook, but clearly as we talked both as department heads and also as village board, we probably identified a good 30 more items in this 20-year outlook. And so we will be spending some time just to hone in on the kind of the priorities in that outlook, what we want to be focusing in on as far as projects into the future. And so I guess in preparation, what I wanted to relay to you tonight is this is the draft. I will send this out to you via email. And then at the end of September, third or fourth week, Kathy plans on us having a budget workshop during that budget workshop, I'm hoping that we will be able to spend a little bit of time just reviewing the outlook, reviewing the whole list of items. Clearly, what I have on this sheet is just a condensed version, so I'd like us to identify together kind of what items are kind of the key priorities, the ones that we want to recognize on the plan, and then we should have a document that is in final form. And so if there are any questions, feel free to, I can entertain those later. Finally, the last item, well, I have two more items. One of the last items, just for Halloween hours, instead of making an action item, just moving forward, we know that it will be the Sunday prior to Halloween. And so we're just announcing it now that Sunday, October 27th, 2019, we're earmarking the hours of 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. as the official village Halloween hours. And then a final item just to bring, I've had some ask me or inquire about when we will modify our village board meeting hours. We plan on bringing that to the village board at the next board meeting, September 16th. It is a part of our ordinance, and so we'll bring it as an ordinance update. So if there are any questions or concerns, feel free to comment or bring those that to my attention. But I think the intent is to move to the 5 p.m. time frame for all village meetings. So with that, that's all I have to report.
Any questions for Nathan? Hearing none. We'll move on to item 7, new business. First item being item A, receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider approval of a conceptual plan as it relates to the properties located on the east side of 47th Avenue between Main Street and 104th Street. This is for the development of Keystone Condominiums.
Jean? Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request for a conceptual plan at the request of Joe Bukovich of Point Real Estate on behalf of Sagewood 47 LLC. And they are requesting to develop the east side of 47th Avenue, south of Main Street, north of Highway 165. This is not technically in the Village Green Center. This is a project area that the staff has been working on and working with this particular landowner for the last couple of years, since about 2016. Keep in mind that this is the Village Green area is an area that saw its first preliminary plat back in 2003, and at that time this area was identified as a townhome project or project area. Since that time, the concept kind of sat on the shelf, and the developer moved forward with the single-family development, and eventually in 2016, 17, and 18, they brought us the condominiums to the north of Main Street. And now the petitioner is requesting to develop the vacant undeveloped land south of Main Street. At that time, it was referred to as Sagewood Condominiums. There were actually two buildings built as part of that condominium development, and now he would like to finish the rest of the development, and he would like to develop it as basically two-unit condos or ranch-style condominiums. Specifically, he is looking to develop 18 two-unit ranch-style condominium units that are proposed to be 1,589 square feet with two bedrooms, two baths, two-car attached garages. They'll have full basements, sunroom, and rear porch patio deck area. It's anticipated that the construction on the required public improvements would commence in the spring of 2020 and that all the units would be completed within 2 to 3 years. In addition, the developer has submitted a draft declaration of condominium along with some conceptual elevations and floor plans for the proposed condominium developments. As you can see on the slide, I've identified specifically the area. Again, it's just east of the Village Green Heights single-family development between Main Street and 104th Street. Just to give you some perspective from an aerial view, again, this Sagewood Circle area, which also is known as 103rd, the units will be completed in that area and then coming off of 47th Avenue, coming up to and pretty much touching into the woods, but not cutting down the trees for this particular area. Again, before you, we see some of the elevations. We are working with them on those elevations. The slide on the left, shows the placement of where each of these units would be located. The intent is to convert that southern horseshoe roadway from a private road to a public road, and then the northerly two would be also, again, public in nature for the development. There have been a series of new wetland delineations done for the property as required because it's been more than 5 years. These wetlands have been identified, field delineated, identified. A few of them will be considered artificial wetlands, specifically hopefully where the pond is located so they can continue to manage that pond. And there are some other small wetlands that have been identified on the property as well. With respect to comprehensive plan compliance and density, it complies with the existing comprehensive plan. In fact, the density is a little less than what was originally envisioned because it has a net density of 2.72 units per net acre. The zoning of the property is currently R9, which is an urban single-family residential district with a planned unit development overlay district for the Sagewood area at the very south end. And then there's an R10 UHO, and there's some C1 and C2 on the property. We will need to have the properties rezoned appropriately based on the density that we're looking at. It's more of an R8 two-family or condominium two-family that we're looking at this location. And those wetlands will need to be placed into the C1, and the remaining C2 areas undisturbed will be placed into that conservancy district as well. The staff is going to begin preparing the PUD, the Planned Unit Development Overlay, for the property as we get a little bit further into the reviews of the detailed plans for the development site. The municipal improvements, municipal sanitary sewer, and water will need to be provided to service all the condominium units within the development. The stormwater retention basin for the development was already constructed, as you can see on the slide. It's really at the southeastern corner of this development. The pond is going to be shared with the Sagewood condominium development, and a flow easement would need to be granted. All required access and maintenance easement, restrictive covenant restrictions, will all be shown on a new certified survey map for this development. Specifically for the Keystone, then, again, net density, proposed zoning, municipal improvements. The construction access for this development will be from 165 in the south, up to on 47th Avenue, and then to service each of the various units that will be under construction. There's a number of additional steps that would need to be completed by the developer. We'll need to go through preliminary and final condominium platting, certified survey map preparation in order to dedicate the public roadways, required easements, and set forth additional dedication and easement provisions, as well as restrictive covenant language on the CSM. As part of the plat and the CSM approval, the developer will be required to execute a development agreement, provide all the exhibits, provide the letter of credit, other financial securities and guarantees to the village, and this will be for the installation, inspection, and warranty of the public improvements. As mentioned at the Plan Commission, that southerly roadway was a private roadway, and that will need to be reconstructed to village standards. There will be a public sidewalk, as noted on the slide in blue. There are sidewalks that run east-west in Main Street on the south side, in the right-of-way on the south side. And so there's going to be a public sidewalk that is connected from Main Street on the east side of 47th Avenue, south to 165, and then east to the property boundary on the east corner. The Plan Commission recommended approval of the conceptual plan, subject to all the comments and conditions as outlined in the staff memorandum. Obviously, this is the first step for them. The next steps will be preliminary condominium approval, engineering plan approval, and then we'll continue with final plat approval and going through all the rest of the final documents for this development. The Plan Commission recommended approval, subject to the comments. The petitioner is also in the audience in the event that the board has any additional comments, John, or questions.
I didn't see anything yet.
Well,
give you up. Gene, I should have brought this up at the Plan Commission meeting last week. Condominiums are usually for empty nesters, senior citizens, and many senior citizens. The concept that Doug Stonick brought to the village with the cottages is there's no steps entering the household, either from the garage or from the front sidewalk, which is nice for seniors that may be a little handicapped. Are we taking into consideration the interior of these buildings that would accommodate maybe wider doorways for the purpose of wheelchairs? And if, you know, you don't want to see a person have to move out of a condo because they can't move around in it. Is that an option at all here?
So I think that's a great question to direct to the developer. I have not seen and gone through the individual floor plans yet. I've measured them, I should say. I've seen them. But maybe he can address some of those comments. This is his like third or fourth or fifth project that he's worked on similar to this.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Could you just give us your name and address for the record?
Todd Becker, N77W23806, Sun Valley Run in Sussex. Thank you, everybody. The plan here was to do traditional construction where we've got not flush entries from either the garage or the front door. That's something I'd like to offer as an option. As we get into that realm, we're taking up the cost, and obviously we're trying to keep this cost as affordable as possible. So it's something that, you know, would be considered on an optional basis, but probably not as a standard basis at this time. With respect to the interior design, obviously we think about that as we develop these plans. Off the top of my head, I don't know if every single door within the, you know, within each condominium unit is 36 inches, but that's certainly something that we could address on a unit-by-unit basis as well.
Thanks, Todd. I would recommend that in the future, Gene, that maybe we study that, and especially for condominium uses, since senior citizens are the major occupants of condos. So just something to think about. I think it would be a wise move for us to consider.
Mike?
Yeah, I had something, and I also wish I would have brought it up at the Plan Commission, but, you know, and after looking at the plans, you know, it kind of jumped out at me. If you look at the background sheet on the map that shows the plat, and we have you've identified the, you know, the parcel that the condos are going to be, yeah, that one there, the parcels will be where they are. Is there a setback back that they're aiming for between those parcel lines and the building, or does that include the outside areas, like the patios and circular walks around the building?
So they do need to meet minimum setbacks to the property lines as well as to the street property line and right-of-way. They also have to meet minimum setbacks for the foundations between the buildings as well as minimum between the patios or decks in between units as well.
Okay.
So they have to meet all of those different minimums.
Because what I'd really like to see this do is, you know, if you look at the cottages, you know, that you've got it's not a real symmetrical layout of the buildings, and they seem to be, you know, cornered, and a couple of them seem like they're shoehorned onto the site where there isn't a symmetrical layout of each building, and which is what the parcel lines look like. So the parcel lines could be like that as long as the building doesn't lay out that way. So I want to make sure there's, you know, one doesn't lead to the other where you have buildings that are kind of offset and you've got a, you know, differential in the sight lines from one building to the next. The second item I'd like you, and that's something, you know, I realize we haven't seen the final draft. I just would like the staff to look at that as they're going through the process. The next thing is on the road to be vacated that's public coming out of Sagewood. Right now that road aims at somebody's front door, front window, when they come out there. And I'd like to see that off shift, just shifted a little bit so that if you're coming out, your headlights are shining between two houses instead of right at one house. And there's less of a problem on the next road north. And, of course, with that one circle drive, there isn't any problem. I think that's something with just a little bit of manipulation of that street layout that can be avoided. That's because those people will be seeing how, you know, streetlight or headlights be pointing at their house every time somebody comes in and out of that land division. So when it'd be nice to see a separate map on the layout, you know, how on the setbacks and on the new buildings as they're set up, and so we can see so we don't see a similar situation that we have in the cottages. That's possible if you could have the developer lay that out. Maybe they've already had that. If you look at the one drawing, there's not a problem, but depending on how much latitude they have on the setbacks, you could be right back into the same thing we have in the cottages. With that, was there a second on the motion?
No. Okay. I don't think there was a motion yet.
Well, there was a motion, okay.
Yes, just give us your name and address.
Joe Bukovich with Point Real Estates, 19,000 West Blue Mound Road, Brookfield. And I just want to address the trustee's comments. From the layout perspective, the color rendering that you see on the screen right here, that is the way it's set up in the computer right now. And you'll see that when you're on curves, they're parallel to the cord on the curve, so they're not crammed in there, like turned cockeyed or anything.
Right.
And when they're on tangents, the front of the buildings are parallel with the road. So right. what you see right here is what you're going to get. And if that's acceptable, we'd like to continue with the way it's designed at this point.
If that ends up, from my standpoint, I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I can live with that if that ends up being the actual product, you know. But if you look at the plats, those aren't. I guess depending on how much advantage you took of the setbacks, you know, you wouldn't end up with that.
Sure.
That same alignment. So sure. On the plat, that gives you the latitude to do it. You know, the picture shows that you won't. I just want to make sure that.
Right. On the plat, we'll be defining the foundations as well on the condo plat. And then shifting the road is going to be difficult. All the utilities are already in, and the storm sewer and the sanitary sewer. So trying to align that between the wooded area and the existing condos to the south and keep the utilities in the roadway is going to be difficult. Just want to point that out for the board. And I think that should address it.
Yeah, I think if, you know, see how far we can, you know, push the utilities from, you know, the utilities are there, right?
Correct. Yeah. Everything's built. All we have to do is go in and.
So however, how far we can offset, you know, if the utilities are more towards one side or another, I guess I'd leave that to the village engineer to take a look at that.
Very good. We'll work with staff on that. So thank you.
Thank you.
John, Gene, do we know Matt, do we know the range of price points? Maybe that's better for you guys. Where are you hoping to be at on the prices?
Question for Todd.
Amen, Todd.
Starting price point is going to be $350,000. Average price point, when all is said and done with basement build-outs and other upgrades, we anticipate $400,000 today.
And then there's the monthly HOA?
$250 a month.
Okay.
Todd, can I ask a question? Just in regards, I know that you've mentioned that you're planning on ranch style. Mm-hmm. Is there any thought process whatsoever to consider a taller story, like a two-story condo towards the north?
Getting back to that topic of the empty nest product, you know, that's the design here. We wanted to stick to ranches. There wasn't any thought of going to two-story homes,
okay,
quite frankly.
Any other questions for Todd?
Do we have a motion, or are we looking for one?
We're still looking for one.
I'll move approval of the conceptual plan.
I'll second that with the comments made.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. That moves us on to item B, and item B is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider approval of Ordinance 1924, Ordinance 1925, and Ordinance 1926, and to amend Chapter 420-26 through 420-29 in Chapter 395-97 and Chapter 420-131-T3 of the Village Zoning Ordinance. Jean?
Mr. President, members of the board, the village staff is recommending that the zoning and development application fees be increased from $225 to $250 for minor applications, such as certified survey maps, zoning map amendments, and also then to increase fees from $825 to $850 for other applications, including such as site and operational plans, PUD ordinances, conceptual plans, and plats. Fees, after approved by the board, would become effective on September 1st, 2019. The current fees have remained unchanged since January 1st, 2011. The other change, which is to Section 420-131-T3 of the Zoning Ordinance, is to indicate that upon FEMA approval of a floodplain boundary adjustment, the village will set the required public hearing to amend the village zoning map, zoning text, and 2035 Comprehensive Plan Amendment to reflect the approved amendment. So we're asking for the fees up front and that we will follow the process to make sure that we get the zoning map and the comprehensive plan maps all updated without having to chase back down the developer or the individual that actually applied for that initial change. A lot of times that happens anywhere from 6 months to 2 years later. So instead of chasing back to them for another application, another fee, we will collect everything up front, and then we will just process it when the applications have been formally approved by FEMA. The staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval of Ordinances 1924, 1925, and 1926.
I move approval to modify the fees as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, and that is receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider approval of a right-of-way recovery and funding agreement between the Village of Pleasant Prairie and Creekside MF, LLC, and it's for the extension of public water main on Old Green Bay Road.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is the right-of-way recovery agreement for the water main that we discussed earlier in the public hearing. This allows the village to recover funds from that special assessment for a 10-year period. If somebody connects into that water main and the assessment is due, we would give that money to the developer. Again, the right of recovery agreement expires in 10 years or August 19, 2029. With that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mike? I have one. One of the things I'd like to, if we could explore it, is to have the right of recovery agreement, and we'll have in our files, and it'll be on the file for Bear Realty, but I'd like to make sure they're recorded with the files on the affected properties for a couple reasons. One is that if there's a change of personnel here, that it protects that property owner from having to connect to water when the original deal was that they didn't have connect to water. And if they go to sell their house, that privilege of not having to connect to water goes, it's obvious it goes with the property, so it doesn't cloud a buyer-seller transaction. And the fact that that date is set for August 19th, in this case, 2029, would be the wall where if they don't hook up by then and the developer, there's no reason for them to have hooked up or made that change, that sticks. And I really believe that that's recorded as an agreement on the parcel. If there's a subsequent change by the Public Service Commission that might modify how the water utility is collecting these fees that are in right of recovery, it would protect the property owners that I don't know if there's anybody here that's in that's part of this, but it would protect their knowledge that they didn't have to pay if they waited till after 10 years to connect. That right would still be recorded as a benefit on the property. I think it just makes the village record keeping easier because that's they've got that in their hands in the sense that it's on their title and it protects them. And for many subsequent changes, whether it be by bear or by some future property owner or from the state modifying a regulation. And I know we've had some in the past, and they weren't on the affected properties file. And there's so many different ways where people can get deed information other than going to the county register of deeds. I think it's one way to protect us, you know, from a transaction happening outside the loop that we don't have any control over. So, I don't think it's an adverse posting on the individual's property. It's really a beneficial one. It protects their rights on this. So, but that's my recommendation. You might want to run it by council.
We'll look into it.
Was there a motion? No.
Move approval of the right of recovery and funding agreement.
Second.
Motion by Chris, second by Dave. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item D, consider approval of the third amendment to the Declaration of Restrictions. This is of the Meadowland Subdivision.
Mr. President, the staff received a letter from Bride Puntillo. He's the assistant property manager for the Meadowlands Homeowners Association. They're seeking approval for an amendment to their declaration, and 75% of the property owners consented to this amendment, which is required as part of their document approval. At one of their previous association's annual meetings, a motion was entertained that the Board of Directors seek legal counsel regarding the current language in their declarations pertaining to mailbox maintenance and parkway tree maintenance replacement. Specifically, members were concerned about how expensive the trees are and that their annual budget did not collect enough to keep replacing trees on behalf of the residents on an annual basis. Members also spoke about the need to keep their association fees as stable as possible. So after seeking their counsel, they were advised that the current language in their declaration regarding late fee collection is unreasonable and they would not be supported in courts. So, for example, their current language called for a per diem percentage and monetary fees that could quickly escalate into the thousands of dollars for being late on a payment. So they were sent a package of information, and they did receive 75% of the owner's consent for the following changes. First, if they need a new mailbox, they'd notify their property management office. They'll need to replace it for them. The cost to replace the mailbox will be charged to the homeowner. Next, if they need a parkway tree replaced, they'd be notified by the property management office that they will ask that they provide them with the type and size of the tree that they're requesting to plant. The village has restrictions on what you can plant in the parkway, so that is why they have to continue to monitor this. Once they receive permission in writing from property management, they will need to replace the tree. The cost of the tree is the responsibility of the homeowner. If any trees are replaced without approval, they are subject to any fines as stated in their declaration. And finally, the third change, in addition to an 18% interest charge, a late charge of up to $5 per day may be imposed, not $50, but $5 per day may be imposed by the Board of Directors against the owner if any balance in common expenses remains unpaid for more than 30 days after the payment is due. So our ordinance requires that any property owners that make amendments to their declarations that they need to be reviewed by staff and approved by the village board. We review them just to make sure that there aren't any conflicts with village ordinances, and they are recommending approval so they can record this amendment to their declarations.
And that's the staff's recommendation as well?
Yes.
I move that we approve the Third Amendment to the Declaration of Covenants for the Meadowlands Subdivision as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Gene, you were collecting $50 a day on the late fee?
I think that's what it said in their declarations, that there was a penalty fee of $50 instead of $5. We weren't collecting that.
That's quite a change.
Yeah. I think it might have been a typo or something, because I saw it. I think it said 50. I think it meant to say, yeah. It said interest on any unpaid assessments or charges, and it was a late charge of $50 per day, which seemed extensive. So they changed that to $5.
Okay. Further comment or question? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item E, and that is the consideration of the approval of Ordinance 1927. This is to amend Section 234.8 as it relates to the enforcement of abatement of nuisances.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request to amend Ordinance Number 19-27, and this has to do with enforcement and abatement of nuisances. With our new code enforcement officer, there has been an aggressive enforcement of nuisances on village properties throughout the community, several of them. And there was some questions as to whether or not the code enforcement officer had the right to do the inspections on the property and that they had the right to access the property to take photographs, and that they, after presenting identification, to proceed in the code enforcement process on the property, and so, or to serve a special inspection warrant on the property. And right now, the chief of police, the fire chief, and the building inspector, and the health officer, and the zoning administrator all have that permission. But the code enforcement officer is not specifically listed. And since we have a full-time code enforcement officer, we wanted to make sure that the rights were given to this position as well. And the changes, as noted, are stated in the staff comments. The staff recommends approval as presented.
John?
Mike?
I agree with this, Gina. The only correction I would add to this is we're assuming that our code enforcement officer is always going to be a male, and the ordinance says him and he, where it should say he, him, or her. I just want to be politically correct here.
I understand that, but there's a provision in the zoning ordinance and the municipal code that it doesn't refer to her anywhere in the zoning code or the municipal code, so I think it's intended that it could apply to either sex when they were.
And for what it's worth, Greg's doing a very good job for us. Very good job.
Thank you.
Just for clarity on that too, just to follow up, in legal terms, most of the time when we go and do recodifications and things of that nature, that's one of the items that the legal team will come back and say, so we shouldn't take it as a sexist comment. So, yeah, there you go.
Chris?
Just for clarification and help educate me a little bit, and maybe anybody in the audience. So some of these violations obviously are visible from the road, that they could stay in their car and see them, but for some that they may need to exit the vehicle and do some further inspections. Is it customary to knock on the door first to let them know they're there for that, or is it to a point where if somebody has to go around back maybe by a fence or through some obstruction, that only if somebody from the property comes out and asks, then is ID shown? I'm just wondering what the typical process is.
So typically what happens is any of our enforcement officers will typically go up and knock on the door.
Okay.
And if there's nobody home, or if a neighbor has given them permission to go in their backyards to look over fences and things like that, then we've done that as well.
Yeah.
If the inspector's asked to leave the property, then we immediately leave the property. But then what typically would happen is that an inspection warrant would be obtained.
And how often does it get to that level where they're requested to leave and you have to get the warrant?
It has happened a few times.
Okay. That's a shame, but okay. Thank you.
Follow up on that one, Gene. So currently, if one of these staff knock on the door and no one's home, does the staff walk around the property, or only if they have permission from the property owner or their designee?
You know, I'd have to speak with Greg to see what he's done. Typically what I used to do is I used to go to the neighbors on either side, and then I would ask to go through their property to see, because I never knew if there might be a dog or other type of things on the property that would prevent access. So, and I never felt comfortable going to the backyard of somebody's property without knowing what was back there in advance. Okay. So oftentimes I would go to the neighbor on either side. I'd have to talk to Greg, but he's done multiple different things. He's gone to the front door. He's gone to a neighbor. He's come back to the site. But, I mean, if it's all fenced and gated and locked off, obviously he can't get to the backyard or he can't see to the backyard.
So with an eye on any, I don't know what the court background is on this. This new ordinance, the inspection would only occur with a warrant signed off by a third party.
If he's denied access.
Okay.
Is there the ability to use a drone by any chance for inspection?
We have talked about that. We have not used one up to this point, but we have talked about that ability to use one.
Fire department has one, correct? No?
I know IT works and has one.
Just, I'm going to chime in. There are privacy laws, and so there are some cautionary tales. I don't want to go down a rabbit trail that...
There's height limits and other stuff, too.
Right.
In some situations, it might be beneficial. It doesn't need to be the... happen wine, but something to help.
One additional question on we have the health officer. Is that still the old throwback to when we had a health officer?
I think that's the administrator, isn't it?
If he wants an additional title, he can have it. But
it is a throwback.
Maybe we ought to just take the opportunity to eliminate it.
I mean, there is a health officer, a technical health officer for the community is from Kenosha County.
Right.
So we have not taken that out of our ordinance.
They'd be operating under their own ordinance for their...
They would be operating under their own ordinance, but we have not removed it from our ordinance at this point.
Along those same lines, we could easily add health officer to Greg's title and resolve it that way too as well. The fact is that this is just a clarifying factor. I think the majority of times Greg is permitted... I think it was mostly just an opportunity to raise a question, and so now we're resolving that and making it so that it's no longer a question.
I move approval of Ordinance 1927.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for adoption of Ordinance 1927. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item 8, consent agenda consisting of items 1 and 2, item 1 being the minutes, the meeting for August 5th, 2019, and item 2 being the reappointments to various boards and commissions.
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on those two items? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 9, Village Board comments.
Move to adjourn.
I have one thing.
Oh. Yeah, we're not done yet.
I just want to say that we had the Pan American swimming meet, or open water course, this at Recplex this weekend. Apparently, it went off really well. It's the first one, and I know that Recplex and the Village's Convention and Visitors Bureau with Michelle did a lot of work to get that put together, and apparently the end result was everybody was happy and they want to look at coming back in 2 years, and hopefully it'll bring more people here. Some of the countries had some passport problems from South America, I don't know what that issue was. But anyway, it's nice to know that you can have an international competition out there that does fairly well, and they did a good job of it. And I think the one complaint I heard is that the water was too cold. It was 80 degrees, and they're used to swimming in 90-degree water. So
maybe you can just highlight a little farther exactly what the Pan American Games are.
Well, it's a... open water swim, similar to what they have in triathlon. And prior to this, it was held in the Bahamas. So, and that was a really nice place to go to swim, I'm sure, but it was cost prohibitive for a lot of U.S. and Canadian people, and maybe not some, and maybe even to some extent for the South American people. So we had participants from Argentina, Guatemala. Ecuador and Venezuela couldn't make it. There was another one. I think there were some Brazil people there. Honduras. Okay. Steve was our goodwill ambassador, the Argentinian contingent. So they come here, and this is an event that's held every 2 years. And they're not competing between countries. They're, you know, they are from countries, but they're really working against the clock. And this enables them to go on to bigger and better meets. So Lake Andrea is a really clean lake, and typically it's well at 8 degrees. That's pretty warm water. It's warmer than it is in the 50 meter pool. So it's the opportunity to get out there and be in the lake, and it showcases the village. It, you know, they had the opportunity. We had two USA members from the USA Open Water Team conduct clinics at Recplex for swimmers that wanted to come and who were viewing it or even that were in the competition. So it was a nice event. And I think, you know, to the extent that we can make it a little bit better, round out some of the rough edges that there weren't many, but there were some. I think it'll be a good event for us to have in the future.
Are there village board comments? Hearing none, Mr. Serpy?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.